Quick break, and thank you for your patience. And we will start on item 8. I do have a number of cards, and I believe Mr. Kelly and Mr. Warner are up front here. And I have two more. Dean, okay. And I'm not sure on the other name. Masser? Okay, yeah. So we have you two there. So we will start with staff. We have this, it broken down here, Yuri and Bruce.
Item is consideration adoption of site cleanup requirements for the Mayhew Center and Dean Donovan. This is an item where we have separated staff functions, so your advisory. Are we not hearing? Hearing too much. Your advisory team is Yuri and me, and cleanup team is headed by Diane, so I'll turn it at this point over to Diane.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Just for the record, I'll introduce the cleanup team, myself, Diane White. Stephen Hill is our division chief in the Toxics Cleanup Division. Mary Rose Casa is the section leader within that. Ralph Lambert will be giving the staff presentation, and we've been working with Tamarin Austin for our legal counsel. And just as a few quick overview, I'll say about this site, you'll certainly hear more from Ralph, is the site cleanup requirements themselves represent essentially our standard approach to facilitating cleanup at groundwater contamination sites. What you're here is, it's a little complicated in this case because of issues surrounding a neighboring property, as well as a federal court order that has been imposed. So Ralph will spend some time going into a little bit of detail in regard to response to comments on those issues. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ralph.
Could everyone hear those comments? Yeah, let's just make sure we're all, recording, Secretary, you're all right up there hearing everything? Okay, very good, thank you. Go ahead, staff, please.
Okay. Well, good morning, Chair Mueller and members of the board. I'm Ralph Lambert, a California professional geologist and certified hydrogeologist working in the Toxics Cleanup Division. In my presentation, I'll provide some site background and discuss why an order is needed. I'll also discuss major comments received and cleanup staff responses to those comments. The Mayhew Center site is depicted by a star on this map. It's located along the boundary between Pleasant Hill and Walnut Creek and less than a mile from the Pleasant Hill BART station and Interstate 680 in Pleasant Hill. The site, outlined in red near the center, covers about 3.5 acres. The site's located in a mixed residential and commercial area and consists of three two-story industrial office buildings constructed during the mid-1970s. There have been several owners and several hundred tenants in the building since construction. This map also identifies the nearby Hookston Station cleanup site to the east, the Haber Oil site to the north, and the adjacent Walnut Creek Manor property to the west. Walnut Creek Manor consists of senior living apartments and will be mentioned more later in this presentation. Mayhew Center has had a significant release of perchloroethylene, or PCE. PCE is a chlorinated solvent that is used in manufacturing and in dry cleaning. PCE is a suspected carcinogen. These bar graphs illustrated the highest concentrations found on-site and compares them to selected environmental screening levels, or ESLs. Note that the vertical scale is logarithmic and that the actual concentrations are on the top of each bar. The bar graph on the left shows the PCE concentration in soil exceeded our screening level for leaching to groundwater by up to 2 orders of magnitude. The bar graph in the middle shows the PCE concentration in groundwater exceed the drinking water standard by up to 3 orders of magnitude and also significantly exceed our screening level for volatilization from groundwater to indoor vapor. The bar graph on the right shows that PCE concentrations in soil vapor exceed our screening level for vapor intrusion by up to 3 orders of magnitude. There is a significant plume of contaminated groundwater that starts at Mayhew Center. This area is in the Ignacio Valley groundwater basin, and there has been historical use of the groundwater in the neighborhood for watering yards. We have worked with the county to prohibit the installation of new wells in the area until the groundwater has been cleaned up. Elevated concentrations of PCE were found in shallow soil and groundwater samples beginning in 2005 on site, indicating that PCE was released at the Mayhew Center site, which is outlined in yellow here. The PCE groundwater plume is about 1,400 feet long, as indicated by the dashed red line on the slide. The X's on the slide illustrate some of the well locations. Additional investigation is needed to determine if there is a vapor intrusion threat and fill in data gaps in the groundwater plume. As shown in the last slide, the red dashed line represents the 5 microgram per liter concentration of PCE in groundwater. This is the drinking water standard. PCE has been detected at a maximum of 7,300 micrograms per liter on site in groundwater. There is a need to determine the extent of PCE in groundwater leaving the site in the area indicated in rectangle marked investigate groundwater at the property boundary. There is also a need to investigate potential preferential pathways such as storm drains and sewer lines. These investigations are required to better understand the PCE distribution and to help identify if there might be another release area such as a leaky sewer line or an unidentified offsite source that may be contributing to the plume.
Now, based on this, you've got two colors on your...
Yes, the contours.
Do those represent isopaths?
Yes, the purple line is a 200 microgram per liter line. The red is 5 micrograms or parts per billion. And there's 4 or 5 locations that exceeded 2,000. So based on the concentration of groundwater, there's a need to do soil gas sampling around at least the 2 buildings shaded in green, which are sort of visible, that overlie the PCE plume to determine if there's a potential for the risk from vapor intrusion to human health. One of these buildings is off-site. In addition, soil gas sampling should be done to the west at Walnut Creek Manor near the buildings closest to the plume to determine if there may be a risk from vapor intrusion, even though the buildings are not over the plume. Interim
Excuse
cleanup
me,
is needed.
I was just trying to figure out what's on the map, and it's easier to see, I think, on the handout. There's another building that's within the 200 isopleth that's...
Yes, further
up,
down gradient.
Up to the right. And is that Hookson Station or something that we're dealing with under a separate...
Yeah, there's a separate plume, a TCE plume that's starting around there.
Okay.
And...
Do you want to go to the previous slide? The previous slide?
I think she's talking about this one where it overlies the... Let's see.
There.
Okay, yeah, you can see it there, too.
Yeah, in sort of in the upper right. Is that...
Part of that is Hookston Station. Part of it isn't. There's some interview... There's another building. The idea is to... Or my idea is, anyway, to start where the concentrations are highest and see if there's a problem.
Okay.
Problem there.
And to stay on this for a minute, because these help clear up a lot of questions. The black dots, I presume, are well sites?
The X's are wells. The black dots are some that were just grab samples.
Grab samples
of the water. And there were soil samples. So.
And
yeah, these are monitoring wells, not drinking water wells.
From this perspective, the net flow direction is fairly clear, but there's some potential for reversing flow. I know that's one of the issues here.
The groundwater flow direction is to the northeast.
So
Jim, can you speak into the mic a little bit to make sure?
So I know from reading the packet that one of the questions is the degree to which there may be migration in more than just the down gradient. It also appears to be some question about where the contamination originated. So if you go through this from here, and that's complicated, presumably, and that's one of the reasons that you want to look at preferable pathways, such as storm drains, that they may transfer contaminants from one location to another and obscure where it might have come from originally. Is that?
Well, part of this is the elevation, surface elevation at Mayhew Center is 2 to 3 feet higher than at Walnut Creek Manor, and looks some of the soil contamination has gone to Walnut Creek Manor.
Ralph, if I could, we actually have a cross-section that shows a little bit more detail further in the presentation, so if you don't mind, we can go through and then maybe circle back to this slide.
Right, part of the question that I think these all hook in is, to what degree do you have artificial fill as opposed to subsurface soils, because it mm-hmm. helps the picture, and I didn't pick these things up from reading the staff report, so.
Okay.
Okay. So let's see. So interim cleanup is needed for the impacted soil source area to prevent continued impacts to groundwater and to soil vapor. Soil concentrations in limited areas, shown schematically in blue or green here on this slide, are also are above concentrations that could act as a continuing source of PCE leaching to groundwater and soil vapor. Interim vapor mitigation could also be required if additional investigations show there's a threat from vapor intrusion.
What is the nature of the improvement just to the left of the property line there?
The property line is in red. That it's mentioned later, but that broad stripe structure is a carport all along the property line. And then on the left side of that is a driveway or road. The completion of site investigation and cleanup of the site has been significantly delayed due to Mayhew Center's recalcitrance and disputes between Mayhew Center and its neighbor, Walnut Creek Manor. Mayhew Center's had a history of noncompliance. We've issued 4 notices of violation for failure to submit required reports. And in 2012, the Water Board imposed a fine of just under $17,000 for not submitting required reports. We have directed Mayhew Center multiple times to proceed with work on their own property, even if they couldn't get access to Walnut Creek Manor. They still have not completed some of the approved work. Walnut Creek Manor and Mayhew Center sued each other in 2007, blaming the other for the contamination. In 2010, the federal court ruled that Mayhew Center property is the source, and that Walnut Creek Manor is not the source of all PCE contamination. Also, the court found that Mayhew Center and Dean Donovan 100% liable for cleanup costs. We also think that Mayhew Center is a source of contamination. The federal court issued an order against Mayhew Center and Dean Donovan, and it's our understanding, as part of the court order, that over $1 million went into an escrow account to be used for cleanup of Walnut Creek Manor. If cleanup was completed successfully, then remaining funds would be returned to Mayhew Center. If cleanup was not done, Walnut Creek Manor could keep the money, and Mayhew Center was still liable for cleanup. There have been disagreements between Mayhew Center and Walnut Creek Manor over such things as insurance requirements, proposed work plans, and site restoration required that have prevented access to Walnut Creek Manor's property. Disputes over what should be paid by the escrow account has also hampered work at the site. A cleanup order is required because the site has a potentially significant health threat. It's a high priority for cleanup, and the order provides a clear path forward. The order is needed to get additional investigation and remediation going since it is stalled. This order also helps pave the way for future enforcement actions if needed. The tentative order would establish site cleanup requirements for the Mayhew Center site. It would name the current owners as dischargers, and it would require the dischargers to carry out key tasks, including additional site investigation, interim cleanup, of the source areas and final and preparation of a final cleanup plan. The original tentative order was circulated in June for comment. Based on comments from several parties and internal discussions, we revised the named parties, and incorporated some of the comments, then recirculated the revised tentative order in October. We only received comments on the October draft from Walnut Creek Manor's attorney and consultant. We haven't received any comments from the named discharger, that is from Mayhew Center, LLC, or Dean Donovan, on either tentative order. However, he and his consultant are here today. All comments on the October revised tentative order are included as Appendix B of your agenda materials for this item. The cleanup team's responses to comments is included as Appendix C. I'll now focus on the major comments submitted by Walnut Creek Manor. The overall general comment from Walnut Creek Manor is that the revised tentative order should enforce the federal court order against Mayhew Center. We disagree. The Water Board was not a party to that litigation. The Water Board is charged with preserving and or restoring the quality of water and the protection of human health. This revised tentative order fulfills that charge in a way that is not inconsistent with the goals of the federal court order and is consistent with the Water Code. It's unnecessary and inappropriate to incorporate the specific features of the federal court order into the revised tentative order. The federal court order does not address the bulk of the contamination and the source control, which is at Mayhew Center, or the areas where human health is most likely to be at risk. The revised tentative order does address these concerns of the Water Board. Another major comment from Walnut Creek Manor is that the board order should require cleanup of Walnut Creek Manor to concentrations specified in the federal court order. The Regional Water Board is required to enforce the Water Code, not a civil judgment. The revised tentative order requires cleanup to standards protective of human health and states the remedial action plan must propose remedial work that has a high probability of eliminating unacceptable threats to human health and restoring beneficial uses. This language is compatible with the primary goals of Resolution 9249. Nothing in the revised tentative order prevents cleanup to any specified concentrations, such as those found in the federal court order. Walnut Creek Manor also says that the revised tentative order should require the dischargers to implement the previously approved interim cleanup work plan. As background, Mayhew Center proposed cleanup by excavation in 2012. An interim remedial action plan went out for public comment and was approved by us. However, the remediation was not implemented, due at least in part, to disagreements about site restoration requirements at Walnut Creek Manor. The Water Board told Mayhew Center to proceed with work on its own property, and they performed a pilot test of vapor and groundwater extraction on their own property that looks promising and could reach some over the property line to Walnut Creek Manor. However, Walnut Creek Manor objects to allowing a change in the proposed remediation, and Mayhew Center may not have money to proceed. The cleanup team response is that the Water Code does not allow us to specify the method for compliance. Also, the revised tentative order does not abandon the approved interim remedial action plan, but provides flexibility to perform cleanup if another effective way is demonstrated. This flexibility is necessary given the delays attributed to site access disputes. Next two slides help illustrate this point. This is a cross-section location slide. The blue diagonal line in the center represents the approximate location, the cross section on the next slide. Note the location of the property boundary. And as I mentioned, that vertical linear structure in the center is a long carport. It's on Walnut Creek Manor side. Here's a cross section illustrating soil concentrations at the property boundary looking north. Walnut Creek Manor is on the left. Mayhew Center's on the right. And the property line is depicted with a vertical dash pink line. groundwater is encountered about 15 feet below the surface, and groundwater flow is generally from left to the right, that is from Walnut Creek Manor to Mayhew Center. What the slide shows is that most of the soil impacted with PCE is under Mayhew Center property, with much lower soil concentrations on the Walnut Creek Manor property. Only a very small area of the Walnut Creek Manor property has soil concentrations that may leach to groundwater. This soil pollution presents a minimal threat to Walnut Creek Manor residents since the surface is paved and direct contact with contaminated soil is unlikely. The darker purple shaded area shows where soil may act as a continuing source of PCE to groundwater and vapor and underlies Mayhew Center. Even if Mayhew Center only treats what is under their property, this should be sufficient to abate the potential threat to human health and the environment.
Can I be absolutely clear on that? So the dark has an isopleth of 10, I don't know which, milligrams per kilogram, and these are the soil contents.
Yes.
So the isopleth of 1 milligram per kilogram intersects the property line. Are you saying that anything that at 1 milligram per kilogram, there's no potential for leaching to groundwater, or the potential for leaching to groundwater is minimal?
What our ESL is for leaching to groundwater, which is minimal, is 0.7.
0.7. So there's some small area of contaminated soil that
goes
across the property line that would continue to leach.
That could continue, levels. Yes.
Thank you.
But let me add a follow-up question to that. So, but are you saying then if you excavated right at the property line and did not venture into Walnut Creek Manor, you would remove 99% of the risk?
We had certainly removed most of it. The proposal right now is actually not the excavation, but perhaps, I should say, soil vapor extraction and groundwater extraction. And even if you put a vapor extraction well at the property line, it would draw some from across the property line. But you can also put them on both sides of the property line. We're not saying you don't not to do that.
Interim remedial measure was to remove all the soil with any contamination on either side of the line?
No, to a certain concentration. But it did include both sides of the line.
And shown by your schematic, where you could just stay at the property line, you could still put a soil vapor extraction remedy at the boundary line and do both the excavation and the soil vapor. I know that's not the remedy that's being looked at, but that's something that's possible as well.
It would pull from a little bit further out. It's not clear how far yet.
Thank you.
So Mr. Kissinger, the answer is yes, that one could do both methods. It wouldn't be necessary to, but you could do both.
Just to clarify, the bar charts that you showed us earlier showing the site maxima, those maximum points are somewhere within that purple 10 area? Okay.
Yeah, for soil, the maximum is 14.
So from the perspective of the initiation of the fill, this is a little different than any that I've seen before in that it's not clear, there's no clear land use such as a dry cleaner that was a source. But you're a hydrogeologist, and it's always good to have somebody that really understands groundwater movement on these questions. Is this pattern of flow that you see consistent with a surface or near surface discharge at Mayhew Center that has diffused somewhat in the direction of Walnut Creek Manor, but predominantly moved down gradient in the groundwater basin?
Yes. The groundwater is shown, or water table shown on this slide, most of the soil contamination is above the groundwater and is consistent with the surface releases.
And is it at all possible that this could have been done due to importation of contaminated soil, or is this entirely consistent with a liquid leak?
It appears perhaps leak or dumping.
Or discharge, they, illegal dumping.
Yeah.
It could have been illegal dumping.
Yes.
Now, is it at all conceivable that that could have been over the property line in the back of the carports?
The concentrations, I do have another one that could show. Let me just see if I can find it real quick. So if you look at this slide, which isn't part of the presentation, the highest concentrations found in Mayhew Center in soil is 14 parts per million, milligrams per kilogram. And it occurs, high concentrations occur very shallow at Mayhew Center, approximately at ground level for Walnut Creek Manor. At Walnut Creek Manor, the highest is 4.2. I also show the top seven samples just because seven were detected at Cuff property, which is a property to the north. The lower one shows the highest water sample at different properties. But these support a release at Mayhew Center.
And flow does not concentrate contaminants. Systems tend to disorder.
All right. Thank you. Oops. So let's see. Anyway, this concludes my presentation. I get it? And this is one of three contaminated plumes in the neighborhood that we're trying to get cleaned up. Our efforts are at this site are complicated by discharger's recalcitrance and disputes between the discharger and neighboring property owner, and to some extent by the federal court order. Adopting this cleanup order is standard practice for us, and its provisions are consistent with the intent of the federal court order. So the cleanup team concludes that the site presents a threat to human health and water quality. The order is needed to complete investigation and to accomplish a source area remediation. And this completes my presentation, if you have some other questions.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions at this time? Board member, can you hold on? Okay, we will at this time move over to, I don't know who wants to go first over here, Mr. Kelly or Mr.
If you can use your mic, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. A little switch.
Is it on now? Okay. Chairman Mueller, board members, appreciate the opportunity. The concerns that Walnut Creek Manor specifically has is not that the action is being taken. Brian Kelly, on behalf of Walnut Creek Manor, I'm an attorney with Duane Morris in San Francisco. I've been involved with Walnut Creek Manor since very close to the inception, which is now more than a decade ago, that the first request for information was first submitted to Mayhew Center property and Dean Donovan. And since that time, as Mr. Lambert described, it's been a consistent pushback and difficulty in getting even the most basic information. There's been nothing but finger pointing and accusations that have come from the Mayhew Center property owners and primarily toward the Walnut Creek Manor. So that's a great context of the history that I think focuses where things are. There was litigation, there was a determination based upon all the evidence, and there's been some suggestions as to what that evidence is and questions by Board Member McGrath about the possibilities of this, that, or the other thing, but there's very clear, straightforward evidence that Mr. Warner can address if there are questions of him, but there's no doubt that the source is from the Mayhew Center property, and that's something specifically that we've asked this board to make explicit in the order. The order's a good step. We have problems with it. Primarily, it should have been done a decade ago, or nearly a decade ago now. But that Walnut Creek Manor needs to have a specific finding that it is not, based upon all the evidence that's before the staff. It's been before the staff for many, many years. It's abundantly clear that it is not the source. The language in the order is such that it creates confusion and misdirection and leads to further mischief. Once and for all, if there's evidence, let's have it out. But that evidence has been determined by a federal court. Judge Wilkin ruled that the evidence was overwhelming. The federal jury, the same. The specific concern really is the delay. And the delay has impacted and continues to impact the residential property owner, which is Walnut Creek Manor. Walnut Creek Manor was developed from an orchard, which, of course, from the prior board matter, certainly even orchards aren't without potential impacts, but I'd submit it's not a PCE impact. It was developed by the family that still owns the property today. There's been no change in that use. As mentioned in the presentation, Mayhew Center has been owned by several property owners, hundreds of tenants, and there was a question about the no dry cleaner. Well, that's true. There is no dry cleaner that is known to have been one of the tenants, but there are many electronics manufacturing operations, and at the time, relatively substantial electronic manufacturing operations. Aerial photographs, which are at least or should be part of the board's package, clearly reflect a debris field overlaying the source area. There is just abundant amounts of evidence to support that. So that, as a first instance, this order, and I know that the comment addressing this point, that Walnut Creek Manor is not the property of focus, it's not the discharge, it's not the owner of the property, and while that's true, there is significant overlap and discussion in the order about a secondary source or the fact that there's some back leaching onto the Walnut Creek Manor property. Walnut Creek Manor, and we've suggested language for it in the order, should expressly be identified as the impacted property owner that is being impacted by the recalcitrance of Mayhew Center and that needs to be affirmatively established is not the discharger. So that's a significant point. The other point relates to the federal court order. There's an injunction in place, and there's been remarkable recalcitrance with respect to that injunction. In fact, there's a motion for contempt that's pending with Judge Wilkin. Just yesterday, Judge Wilkin ruled effectively that the contempt was established and that there needs to be proof submitted by Mr. Donovan and by Mayhew Center to demonstrate their overriding cause or their compelling reasons for not having done what they were ordered to do. There is no such overriding or compelling cause. There's been delay after delay. The problem that we have is there was an IRAP that was subject to public comment. It was approved, and it set forth the cleanup, the specific cleanup goals that would achieve remediation of that impacted area and reduce, we believe, the Walnut Creek Manor property to levels that the injunction order required, which is to the levels set by the regulators applicable to residential property owners, which is what Walnut Creek Manor is and what it deserves to have its property protected to. The resolutions of this water board make clear that neighboring properties must be protected. And we believe the IRAP that was approved after public comment, and there's an active notice of violation for failing to take any activity in response to that October 2012 interim remedial action plan, that needs to be implemented. And simply saying, this is the way we do things here, we take and we start from the beginning and go ahead and conduct investigation, there is extensive investigation that's been done. The slides demonstrate it. They've got the ISO contours mapped out, they have all the detail. There's a plan in place that's approved, subject to public comment, subject to notice of violations. It needs to be implemented. So rather than starting at square one saying, go out there and start the investigation and figure this stuff out, makes little sense. The order of the court about which the contempt proceedings will continue early next month explicitly required the property, Walnut Creek Manor, to be cleaned to residential standards set at the lowest level of the regulatory agencies for soil vapor, soil, and groundwater by November of 2012. They're in contempt of that order. The escrow funds that were discussed are no longer available for use for this cleanup, but Mr. Donovan and Mayhew Center remain jointly and severally obligated by court order to do that. We simply want this order to reflect the urgency of this to be done and not to provide yet another roadmap for delay and recalcitrance. There's an order in place. There's a notice of violation. The work has not been done. Pursue enforcement action with respect to that. Bake into the tentative order the requirements that that IRAP be implemented. I understand the concerns expressed that the board doesn't dictate cleanup methods, but the board does have an approved order, a notice of violation that can bring about that result that will clean up the problem that was addressed by Mr. Lambert. Leaving it to the tentative order simply says, give us a report in 5 months that'll tell us what you want to do, move forward at a snail's pace after that, but you can always change, because if you change, there's no teeth to it. There was a cleanup order a cleanup plan subject to specific public comment, approved, begun, and stopped. And this is a part about which I don't think it necessarily has bearing on this board's proceeding, but there's repeated reference in the tentative order and in Mr. Lambert's presentation to access disputes. Even if he were right, that shouldn't be in the order. That has nothing to do with the order. The access agreement set forth in the federal injunction set forth the specific requirements for coming onto the property, and they didn't comply. The court found they didn't comply. So to suggest it's a dispute, it's a recalcitrance yet again. And I'd submit that adoption of this order is drafted without some more specific direction as to what needs to be done and when it needs to be done will lead to further recalcitrance, and we'll be back here yet again and again and again. And that, I think, is the problem. I'm a little disappointed, and while it is technically true that this board is not, and the staff is not, a party to the federal court proceedings, it's a bit arrogant to suggest that it should not comply with a federal court injunction order requiring the cleanup. And it's also a bit disappointing to say, well, that injunction required it to be done by November 2012. We've already missed that date, so why do we care? The injunction sets forth a requirement that residential property be restored to residential standards, and doing so will take care of the problem that Mr. Lambert demonstrated based upon the extensive investigation that's been done to date. So generally, those are my comments. Mr. Warner with Environ has been involved for a significant period of time and understands the data and can address questions. But specifically to recap, we would expressly request that Walnut Creek Manor be explicitly identified based upon all available evidence, conclusive that it's not a discharger at this site. Put that issue to rest. That rather than adopting an open-ended new process to evaluate and go forward, to require that there be compliance with existing approved IRAPs and to get the work done, rather than to start at square one and move forward consistent with convention and practice, which I think is inappropriate given extensive history, and then finally to comply with a federal court order. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any comments or questions at this point, or we can move on to the next?
Let me ask
Mr. Kissinger.
So, maybe it's just coincidence, but I guess I'd like to better understand the timing. You got the injunction in November of 2012?
No, November of 2010. There was a federal court trial in 2009. And while the order made explicit that there was a finding, there were damages awarded, and there were an abatement, a nuisance that had to be abated. There were post-trial motions, as there often are, threats of appeal, went through a fairly extensive mediation process that was participated by all, and in fact, the board was writing letters with respect to this. The board was on notice of the injunction that was implemented. It resulted in a settlement that allowed the damages that were awarded to my client, Walnut Creek Manor, for the damages caused to its property, to be put to use to remediate the Walnut Creek Manor property to levels at or below residential standards. And that was the injunction that was put in place and required that that work, which by all accounts could have been completed and should have been completed within that two-year window. There were specific incentives given to the defendants to do that work within the 2 years, because if they could do it within the 2 years, complete it in a timely fashion within 2 years, which is what we desired, Walnut Creek Manor desired, the defendant would be entitled to whatever funds remained from that escrow. Instead, they waited till the day before the expiration. They filed a motion and said, give us more time, pointing fingers to the other side of the fence, saying they're the reason why all the problems, and to some extent, this is why it's a raw nerve, the access dispute that is identified. The court said, that's just not, you violated the order and the intention. You haven't demonstrated any good cause to extend the deadline. You're in violation, yet go forward and complete by July of 2013, implement the IRAP by that point in time. The funds are available to do that, but they didn't do that. They came up with a new plan and ignored the staff.
And you said earlier that there were no escrow funds available any longer. Is that because under the injunction, they forfeited those funds by not meeting that deadline? Is that why it's not available any longer?
Correct. And Walnut Creek Manor voluntarily agreed that to complete the IRAP, the 2012 IRAP, they could be left in place through July of this year. The IRAP hasn't been, they've abandoned it.
Did Mayhew Center represent that they would get the IRAP remedies completed by July?
That was the basis for their request for more time, is that they need, it was going to be coming into the rainy season, couldn't do the work during the November to February time period, which we readily agreed with. But July, that was a reasonable time. You just need to work out the issues, and there was some issues that needed to be resolved. And instead of doing that, they went kind of underground and changed the approach. They had a new consultant come in. This is probably the at least the eighth or ninth. They've been through about a half a dozen attorneys, if not more. And this is just simply part and parcel with the history that my client has had to deal with. A property owner that has been initially forced to do significant amounts of work under threat that they are the responsible party. That's been established. Everything that Mr. Lambert says confirms that, yet they don't want to acknowledge that in this order. And I think
And I assume the board was made aware of this extension of time that Mayhew Center was looking for in order to do the IRAP remedies before July?
I believe the answer is yes. I can't point to a specific document, but that's my recollection. I would think that Mr. Lambert would confirm that, but I can't specifically recall that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Warner, do you have anything to add to that without repeating, please?
I don't want to repeat. Thank you. My name is, let's see here, get this on here. I'll just hold this. My name is Scott Warner. I'm a principal hydrogeologist with Environ. I'm a professional geologist, certified hydrogeologist, certified engineering geologist. My office is in Emeryville. I live in Marin County, so I was listening to what was happening before, too, which was good. I've been involved as a consultant for Walnut Creek Manor for approximately 7 years during the time that Mr. Kelly was mentioning. And as part of that, my work involved with my team, I had been working, by the way, with AMEC Geomatrix at the time. I've changed companies since then. So documents in the file will have a different company than Environ, who I work with right now. But our task was to understand the contaminant issue, the occurrence, the distribution, where was it, what was it, et cetera. So as part of that, we were involved in reviewing the data that had been collected to that time, and then also as part of the process, collecting additional data, which we did, which included subsurface investigation. And I can attest, and Mr. Lambert also did say this and mentions that actually also in the tentative order, that there is substantial comprehensive information available. The data is there. The data has been vetted by board staff and by the various parties as well. And I think we agree that it is to the point, as well as was presented in court, that decisions can be made going forward. And so decisions were made going forward leading up to the interim remedial measure that we were talking about earlier. One of the things I'd also like to mention with respect to the process of the IRAP itself, the first one that is not being implemented right now, that I was part of the process of reviewing on behalf of Walnut Creek Manor the plans that were being developed by Mayhew Center. And the process did involve the plan being developed, drafts performed, or draft documents performed, staff reviewing it, and the other parties reviewing it. So we were part of that. We were also actually part of discussions, ongoing technical discussions with Mayhew Center and their technical consultant on how to implement the IRAP. During that process, access was actually provided to Mayhew Center to come onto Walnut Creek Manor so that Mayhew Center's consultant could collect design data, which they did. They collected soil samples and water samples. So from the standpoint of access is not provided, well, access was actually applied, and Mayhew Center was able to do that. We are interested from a technical perspective in protecting Walnut Creek Manor's property, understanding that the tentative order also looks at properties down gradient. But the source area, which started and was discharged on Mayhew Center property and has impacted Walnut Creek Manor as a receptor, our goal is to assure that that gets taken care of to the standards that are applicable. And I think that's important. There are some technical items within the tentative order and also what has occurred beyond that, which are concerning. One of those actually has to do with the aspect that is on page, actually it's taken care of by, I think, comment number 7 in the response to comments and also on page 4, but the fact that there was an issue about access, that if access is not provided in the tentative order, that if access is not provided to Mayhew Center, then perhaps a barrier could be put in along the property line such that contaminants would not flow from Walnut Creek Manor to Mayhew Center if that remediation took place. The troubling aspect of that is that that seems to indicate that a source is on Walnut Creek Manor, and that's incorrect. That's technically not correct. And from that technical aspect, I think it's really important to make sure there was no confusion, as Mr. Kelly was mentioning. That's a very important aspect. The comments about a secondary source being on Walnut Creek Manor also, I think, are misleading. Understand the issue that if you have any concentrations of a chemical above background, you know, that could potentially move. That's something that needs to be taken care of. But to actually imply that there is a source on Walnut Creek Manor, aside from the administrative aspects of that, but from a technical perspective, I think is also misleading. And we'd like to see that changed and corrected so that it is actually accurate. One of the problems about not implementing the IRAP is that time continues. And as we know, chemistry and geology don't care about time. They continue no matter what. And so the longer that we have waited, additional leaching and additional impact can continue to occur. It wasn't presented in the maps that Mr. Lambert showed, but that area along the property line on Mayhew Center, about 3 feet or so of width, is a planter strip. There were or have been oleanders and other plantings along that as an area where discharge could occur, where rainwater and irrigation water can go down. So even though we might say most of that property is paved, there still is access for water to move downward and move outward. And that's part of the issue about contaminants continuing. And that's why also taking care of the source is really important. Even if we've had a dry season, it's not like that all the time, and there still is material that will move downward. two other important aspects about subsurface transport that are due to, I will call, anthropogenic incidents. In the record, and as came out in the history of the sites, a number of years ago, in an investigation conducted by Mayhew Center, what is referred to as a slant boring from Mayhew Center underground at an angle toward Walnut Creek Manor is reported and was also provided evidence in the court proceedings. The aspect of putting that slant boring in through a source area on Mayhew Center into Walnut Creek Manor is a nice way to actually transport contaminants across the property line. That's one thing. The second thing that we are concerned about with regards to the proposed new remedial measures that that Mayhew Center is proposing, they are talking about using multi-phase extraction, which we know in certain circumstances can work very well. There's no question that mass can be removed. To use that technology to clean up a site to residential standards, there's a lot more evidence that needs to be taken care of to prove that that will happen, actually, especially when you're moving across property lines, not property lines, but you're moving several feet, tens of feet, you know, in one direction. Can you actually get the movement of contaminants into your wells? The second thing is that a pilot program with the MPE work was conducted by Mayhew Center without a work plan, at least a work plan that we were able to see, without a formal written approval from board staff that we were able to see. And what we have now is a deep, long-screened well sitting in a source area adjacent to the property line on Mayhew Center property. As we all know, as the regional boards across the state know, long-screened wells are problematic and can be problematic if they're just sitting there. We talked about water that can move downward, whether or not that area is paved or not. And we know that water moving downward along the casing or near it can actually access, and you can have a contaminant pathway moving downward. And even if you have a remedy later on that will be effective, you've now made your efforts more difficult because of the potential for contaminants to continue to move in multi-directions, in three dimensions, not just with groundwater, but along with the soil, the way, you know, water moves downward. So those are some of our concerns. I fully appreciate board staff and having the technical discussions we have. We've had disagreements, but disagreements are fine if you come to a resolution. That's okay. Walnut Creek Manor wants their property, you know, taken care of. We want the tentative order, but we want it accurate, representative, and so we can move forward. And we want the source on behalf of, you know, Walnut Creek Manor, a residential property, dealt with.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, Board Member Kissinger.
Two more questions. You said you have a motion for contempt pending before. Is it still before Judge Wilkin?
Correct.
And I guess it's a two-part question. What are you asking for? Are you just seeking penalties, or are you asking them to take some action? And if this tentative order is issued, what's the relationship to your contempt order?
The first part of it is the contempt order seeks attorney's fees. It seeks return of the escrow funds, which is about $500,000 that was spent on these efforts that end up now being completely wasteful because the direction is now moving away from the 2012 IRAP, and we've asked that those funds that were allowed to be paid from the escrow be returned. That's primarily the attorney's fees and the return from Mayhew Center and Dunavant. Those are the primary components of that.
So you're not asking the court to order the IRAP remedies to actually be implemented?
Well, in fact, what has to happen is, and this is part of the contempt, they have not done the cleanup that the IRAP set forth, and that they represented they needed the 6 or 7 months to complete. So it's a basis for the contempt. They need to get it done, and we will be pushing aggressively that the October 12, 2012 IRAP be completed.
Are you asking the court to order them to complete it by a date certain?
I have to say, I don't believe that's a specific point in the request, but certainly it will be requested.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair?
And excuse me, there was one other point. We'd ask that there be some sort of a technical monitor to oversee that effort so that it gets achieved and the disputes are brought to the court's attention more quickly.
Just a point of order. If we are going to ask questions of the staff based on this testimony, do you want us to do it now or wait until we hear from the other commenters?
What's our legal advice here, Yuri?
I would recommend that we hear from the other party.
Good question. So we'll have Mr. Devin. Should we change chairs here, or what do you recommend, Yuri?
They were invited to sit up here, but they declined.
Would they like to comment at the podium?
So, okay.
We do give you permission to come forward. Recommend someone from our staff to visit with the next item on the agenda group and say that we're running a little bit late. If someone could handle that for us. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Devin.
Thank you. My name is Dean Donovan.
Donovan, I'm sorry.
This is my first time presenting before you, so bear with me, please. I don't know all the protocol. I sat here and listen to Mr. Kelly's spin on things. One of the things, I did lose a lawsuit. And why did I lose the lawsuit? Because my attorney didn't disclose evidence that I had found. My environmentalist, Dr. Sapir here, found that Walnut Creek Manor had a diesel generator on their property. And the attorney did not do any investigation. And diesel generators of the 60s, there was typically two different types, and in their routine maintenance needed dry cleaning solvent. Diesel becomes very sticky if it's been on there very long, and you have to, like a molasses or a sugar, and you have to clean it off. Walnut Creek Manor did not do a complete site history, even though they've been ordered or requested on more than one occasion by the Water Board. They only went back to when, I think, bear with me, I could be wrong on the date, I think 1987, but the project was built in 63 period of time. Mr. Kelly is right, it was farmland, and the nice part about this whole area, we do know the history. The Hook family owned the land, I believe, since 1851, and it was agriculture, dry cropping, including where my buildings as Mayhew Center sit. I presented to Fred Blum that I had a witness. And that witness sent us to a lady who worked at Walnut Creek Manor. And in the early 80s, they had trucks, and staff from time to time did vehicle repairs. And as we know, you can be using dry cleaning solvent, PCE. I lost the lawsuit. I'm not crying about it. But why am I bringing this up? Because it hits his motive of why he wants to be not the discharger. He doesn't want it disclosed that they could have been. Am I crying about it today? No. Do I want this cleaned up? Yes. I made it a demand of my people to get it cleaned up as fast as possible the moment I lost that lawsuit. We did a polling of the jury, and my attorney pulled another blunder. He got me to agree that the jury wouldn't know that if Mayhew Center was found guilty, that Dean Donovan was guilty. So the jury didn't know. And the jury also said in the polling, Mr. Donovan wasn't guilty. He was a victim. The slant boring that Mr. Warner brought up was by instruction of a Regional Water Quality Control Board caseworker who did testify in federal court that he did oversee that. So that's why I was considered a victim. But again, am I complaining or crying that I lost a lawsuit? No. Wouldn't do any good anyway. Who would listen? The problem has been, I brought on an environmental firm, and I said, look, I don't want to be an obstructionist. You take care of this. They brought in their environmental people. They did a lousy job. See, I report that they won. I'm ashamed that they're saying they won it. Dr. Sapir here, who does a lot of work in the Bay Area, his expertise, I went to him, I think it was September or October 2000, I think it was 12, and had him review the report. The report did not deal with cleaning up the polluted water. Just tear out the soil. And as we all know, if you put oil in water and you have soil and you start taking it out, the hole gets bigger, and when are you going to get? So we're going to end up with millions of dollars in a hole so Walnut Creek Manor can say you didn't do the job? Did I send that to my environmentalist and say, what's the story? Yeah. Did I get the sidestep and the yeah buts? Sure did. We did go to the federal judge and ask for a time extension. I told him to ask for a year without my approval while I'm in court. Your Honor, can I have until July? What about your client? Your client's wishes. We immediately started working on, I don't know, what do you call that procedure you do?
Multiphysics.
Okay, I won't repronounce it. And as soon as we got with the water board, they were pleased. There was one meeting. They were very pleased we were going to this. And the big problem of getting access into Walnut Creek Manor isn't what Mr. Kelly is kind of relaying you. The area in question, and Walnut Creek Manor really has not been tested extensively at perimeters, but not the area in question. This area on their site is where all their dumpsters are. This is where they would put all their cast-offs, motor oil, etc. We had pictures of all this. And it's not the tenants. They would take it to a room in a building, and the staff would pick it up and bring it over there and put stuff there. The problem was, when you looked at the site, you're talking maybe 40 feet of carport. Walnut Creek Manor wanted me to replace 135 feet of carport. And they said, but you've got plenty of money. It's only $500,000. Well, that's, when I measured out the length, that's more than the whole length of Mayhew Center and the fourth buildings owned by Cuff. And you're going, this is abuse. Went before Judge Wilkins, and she agreed with Walnut Creek Manor. Why aren't you doing it? And what it caused the problem is, because the carport was built in the 60s, you couldn't put it back 100% exact today due to today's earthquake standards, codes, and et cetera. Do I understand that? Yes. And that's the nice part of Dr. Sapir's program. Now, let me back up a second. Jan Schulze was my environmentalist, small firm, does a lot of stuff throughout the Bay Area, California, a lot of what this board within the Oakland region does. He'd submit a bill, and both Walnut Creek Manor and Mayhew Center had to both agree for the escrow funds to be paid. Of course, sign it. Walnut Creek Manor would object. You'd overcome that objection. Then there'd be another one. Then there'd be another one, another one. It took Mr. Jan Schulze over a year to get paid for what he was owed. So he quit us. I didn't fire him. He quit us. Do I get along with the guy? Oh, yeah. I just can't blame him. He says, Dean, I'm too small of a firm. I don't have the staff to do what Walnut Creek Manor has. Mansur here had worked on my project before. I brought him back. And the only thing that Jan Schulze did is he put in three wells. Walnut Creek Manor, Mr. Kelly, objected to the wells. Well, as you guys know, you have to have wells to figure out what you're going to do. Dr. Sapir, Mansur, comes in, and he puts in, excuse me if I have the terminology wrong, he puts in two wells so he can do pilot tests. One pump goes down the water, one's up higher, so he can get vapor and he can get oil, water. Brought in a big, giant plastic tank so you could pump the water out to hold it before you got your permit to what we could extract. Walnut Creek Manor's objecting, complaining. We met with the water board while we're doing this. They said, yes, we The staff very diligently, patiently addressed all these points about an IRAP report. They said, just keep going. You can do your IRAP as you're doing. What about a hearing? We've already had one. There's no rules that says we have to have a second. In other words, everything was done with us and the staff. The problem is Walnut Creek Manor feels that they are the ones who should dictate everything. As you heard them complain, this wasn't done, that wasn't done. But the staff had dealt with this, worked with us. We had verbal agreements. We were working exactly with them. Everything is going fine. We put the two wells in. How many days?
Can you use your mic?
He didn't have one. According to Mansert, it took a couple weeks of testing. There was four wells. In his report of just that short period of time, he estimated we extracted out probably 20% of the toxics. So why didn't you continue on, Mr. Donovan? It's because Mansert had submitted two invoices to be paid, a total of $105,000. I have the email here. Mr. Kelly sent to the escrow company. Do not pay it. I don't know about the federal order. I haven't seen it, so I can't. I think it's unfair that Mr. Kelly is telling you something that I, as a party, haven't seen yet. Mr. Kelly, I didn't interrupt you. Thank you. We don't get along.
Well,
the point gets into
me as chair here. We're going to get along.
Yeah. Okay? Well, no, I understand.
I don't need any sniping.
Here's an email. He's saying, pursuant to escrow agreement section D4, Walnut Creek Manor objects to payment of SOMA invoice unless there's a joint release. Well, I've already signed it. It's them that's holding out. Dr. Sapir sends a letter to me, the water board, and he signs a declaration to the federal courts, which staff kind of touched on, where what he's saying is, I only have a copy, I don't have the original. It's to Mr. Kelly. It's dated November 26th. You are aware Dean Donovan retained Sonoma to perform environmental services, blah. To date, Sonoma is owed $105,142.39 for its services performed at subject property. This money is to be paid from the escrow account. And it goes on. And it's talking about they won't allow it. So he sent. And this came from the attorney making a demand. This was the second demand, giving Walnut Creek Manor until the 16th of this month, I believe is the date, to allow the funds to be paid. So why is this project not cleaned up? Because everywhere I churn, I'm not allowed it to be cleaned up. This isn't a case of Mr. Donovan is doing this or doing that. I demand for it to be cleaned up. But when my only source of funds, the opponent that's making these claims, won't allow us to use them for what is legit, what the water board's endorsing. What am I supposed to do? Can anybody here come up with $1 million? I can't. There's $900,000 in that account. And I'm sorry, Mr. Kelly, $500,000 hasn't come out of it. It's about $200,000. And almost half of that came to pay your person to oversee us. While Mr. Schultz is out there doing his work, he would have an environmental person watching the hole being drilled for the well. Okay. So in a nutshell, this isn't fair. The federal courts did name us and said, I am no longer liable after the cleanup. Your order says I'm liable for forever. I'm not complaining I lost the lawsuit, but I don't feel it's fair that I'm railroaded when here I am demanding. Ralph will tell you, I made it clear in 2010, I want this cleaned up now. No jerking around. Out of my control. I am not an environmental person. This is the first time in my life I got involved in toxics. The other thing that hasn't been addressed is your plan up there where it shows the plume goes all this direction? It's inaccurate. It hasn't been determined if it goes from Mayhew Center or to Cuff's property. And what's been totally ignored is when Dr. Sapir here did a phase one, an extensive phase one report years ago and submitted to the board, there was a fire department report, I forget what year it was done, but what's really intriguing is the firemen, it was Applied Optics, had two flammable cabinets. And this fire inspector distinguished that there was PCE and other products in the same cabinet, in two different cabinets. And I went, wow, they actually said PCE? Yes, it was in a report, you know, where the fire department goes out and says, you got to fix this or that. That was there. Everybody's ignored it. And with a high concentration of Cuff's PCE, and when Cuff did his testing, he only went down to A zone, went around the perimeter of the property, where his high concentration is on either side of his lateral. Now, Hookston Station, on the other hand, was what caused everybody to be tested. Tested in front of Mayhew Center, the third building, which is the one closest to Cuff's. Four spots, nothing, zero. Number two, they tested across the street, nothing, until you got down where you would say is the down layer gradient flow from Cuff. There has not been any, the testing shows at Mayhew Center, and my expert, I bow to him, if he knows more than me, shows as you get from the hot spot, as you go north, it goes weaker. So for it to jump up, toxics don't jump. Is there still a few spots that should be tested? Yes, but let us get the source done. The IRAP report that was in question was deeply flawed, and what Dr. Sapir's approach wants to do, he feels we may have to put a couple wells up in the oleanders, up by the property line, and possibly a couple line underneath the carport in Walnut Creek Manor. And in doing so, yes, I asked him a million questions, we could trench and put the pipe underneath the asphalt so the pumping could go and have no problems and obstruction of the use of the dumpster area for Walnut Creek Manor. And then when we get done, you go in and properly fill it. And, you know, we might lose one board or two boards on the fence, and that's about it, and the pipes can come up. The testing that he did, the reason he had to put it in the tank is, what do you do with the off water? Well, after he got done with the lab, the sanitary district said, no problem. You can now dump this in the sewer. It was done. And in his pilot program, that's what he did. He also had to go to the Air Quality Control Board to get a permit to see if he could, after treating the gas coming out of the wells, if that could be going to the atmosphere. And the answer was yes. What he used was 255-gallon charcoal barrels. Now, he'll describe this far better than I'll ever know. I only know it from the layman's point of view. One for air, two barrels for air, two barrels for water. Everything came out clean, and 20% in just a couple weeks. If Mr. Kelly and his people would not have blocked Mr. Sapir from being paid, we'd have been done. If he wouldn't have not given Mr. Schultz such a hard time for a year, I wouldn't have had any problems. Now, I got a couple points here I want to also address. Mr. Kelly, right after I lost the lawsuit, gave an interview to the Contra Costa Times. This has been brought before Judge Wilkins, and he admitted it, so if he wants to deny it, that's fine.
May I say, well, let's try to keep personalities out of it. Let's just stick to the facts.
Well, it tells you where he's coming from.
Well, I understand, but I want to stick to the actual
I want the place case. Cleaned up, and I've always wanted it cleaned.
Thank you.
What I asked the federal judge is, Mr. Kelly asked for a special master to see everything. I says, we don't need that. The water board can oversee this fine. We need a special master to oversee the payments.
Right, but I don't believe we're involved in the payment process. Is
no.
that correct? Okay.
No, but that's
Thank
the
you for
source
that clarification.
Of funds. Yeah. And according, and that would be more than enough to do everything we need to do plus some. Dr. Sapir feels it would cost us under $400,000 to clean it up to meet the standards that we've agreed to in the federal settlement. And then that would leave us another $500,000 to do whatever else needs to be done.
Would you like to comment, sir? Then you could take the mic if you could put some new information in this also. Thank you, Mr. Dunbar.
I kind of walk you through the whole process that I was involved with this project. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My name is Mansoor Sapir. I am with Soma Environmental Engineering. I am a PE and PhD in Environmental Engineering. I got my degree, and it's my own company. I started 20 years ago. I am the president and the principal hydrogeologist at that firm. And my company does a lot of toxic remediation, including petroleum hydrocarbons and chlorinated solvents in the Bay Area.
For the sake of our reporter, could you spell your first and last name, please?
Mansoor, M-A-N-S-O-U-R. And last name is S-E-P-E-H-R.
Thank you.
When I got involved with this project, it was 2005, where Mr. Donovan asked me to come and take some samples to find out what's happening. Right after I did, and we also did one phase one work for him, we find out that there was underground storage tank under the Walnut Creek Manor site, which never was disclosed to Water Board or anybody else. So, we reported that there's a possibility that there's some toxic might be releasing from that Walnut Creek Manor site. But right after that, then a couple of other consultants involved, including the Walnut Creek Manor consultant and Mayhew Center as well. So I kind of was watching from far distance. That project wasn't under my control. Finally, in 2012, when the IRAP was approved and started to get implemented, Mr. Donovan all of a sudden thought about me and then sent me a copy of the IRAP to review for the comment. We do a lot of IRAP. My job is IRAP, production of IRAPs and writing the remedial action plan all the time, last 20 years. When you're looking at the RAP called remedial action plan, it has three components. Got to be effective, got to be feasible, and got to be cost-effective. You have to really compare a bunch of alternatives in doing your remediation work to find out which one of them carries more weight and more feasible, more effective, and less costly. The IRAP that you're talking about, in my first review when I read that one and sent the extensive comment letter to Mr. Donovan and his consultant and his attorney, was that this IRAP has missing two major principles. One is that the cost-wise never been compared to other alternatives. Only one alternative was soil excavation was proposed, while the other alternatives didn't get a chance to be reviewed and compared cost-wise, effective-wise, and feasible cost. So when you do that, at least two or three different remedial technologies should be compared to see which one carries more weight and less costly. So the IRAP never compared alternative of the soil excavation, which very, very expensive and extensive, like 100 feet by 200 feet wide, going 17 feet down, and disposing the soil and transportation excavation. And disposing water, little water might end up cost $4 per gallon to be disposed, was totally, totally ridiculous and outrageous amount of price tag involved with that. The other thing is that the IRAP does not look at it. It's just only focused on the soil. As you see, Mr. Rolf showed that there's about 7,300 ppm PPB, parts per billion PC in the groundwater. Excavation does not take groundwater pollution out. Only as this is the soil, which is the source, fine. But for what price? So when we have the cost estimate from the vendor supposed to do the work, almost $2 million was a price tag to implement that alternative. At the top of it, the carport that Mr. Diamond referred to had to be replaced and had to be, reestablished again per one acre matter demand, which is a kind of, a very expensive way, again, to rebuild those carports. The price of carport that they brought to him was about $450,000 to reestablish and rebuild those carports. I told him with that money, maybe other alternatives possible that can clean up this plume. That's why he became very interested in my approach and said that, okay, why don't you do a pilot test to see what you're going to do. Among the things that we do...
Spear, can I just interrupt you for just 1 second? When did you provide these comments?
Early 2013.
So after the IRAP had originally been adopted by this board?
Yes. After he found out it's very too expensive, he cannot compact, he cannot perform the existing money in the escrow, other alternative was seeking another alternative to do the same thing. I told him that the approach I'm going to propose not only is going to remediate your groundwater, but also your soil with much less price if you let me just do a pilot test. So in that regard, we installed about 4 wells to implement this pilot test. During that time, I was always with Mr. Ralph, was in my email, I was dealing with him, I tell him, getting very, very good advice from Mr. Ralph Lambert to tell me about the depths, about the locations, maybe this and that. So they were kind of involved with this process at get-go. Even though we didn't have time to write a plan, but every step of the way I did, I was kind of getting advice from Waterborne. So we did the pilot test back in, then after we put those results, we put the pilot test. The first of all, before we did the pilot test, there was plenty of data on site, depth-wise, location-wise, but they made a Swiss cheese out of that property. We used that data to come up with the mass, how much mass of PC we're talking about. I came up with about 250 or 240 pounds of the PCE in soil and groundwater. The reason I wanted to run the pilot test, I wanted to know what would be the removal rate by the vapor extraction in order to find out, okay, if the removal rate tells me 5 pounds a day, 250 divided by 5 makes in 50 day to accomplish the objective, to take the toxic out. That was the reason that I had to do the pilot test. So during the months of June and July, we did the pilot test. I mean, in order to run the pilot test, I had to get the permit from the air board to discharge the contaminated water to the sewer from the Contra Costa sewer district, sanitary district. So we did everything. In about 10 days, we removed almost 60 pounds of the PCE from the ground. 60. My report was sent to everybody has a copy of our pilot test report. But again, the cost of putting those wells and running the test, which was very expensive because the machine that we are using generates about 28 inches of mercury vacuum in the ground. So it pulled a lot of mass out of it because PC is a volatile chemical. By the way, the only exposure pathway that one acrylic manner or the Mayhew Center people may be exposed is the vapor intrusion to the building. So vacuuming with the 80 inches of it, with the 28 inches of mercury, sucking all the air and vapor out of the ground, it would mitigate any risk to the human health. Much, much, much reasonable price than excavating the whole world, and it's still the groundwater, still the issue is there. So I would say the IRAP could not be really technically implemented because there's some flying. It wasn't correct. It wasn't put properly. So my approach, which I have a report that I already presented to Mr. Lambert and Waterborne, shows that about in a 2 weeks time, less than 2 weeks, we pull more than 20% of the chemical off the ground with no with the $100,000 that I built them, including the installation of the wells and doing all those mitigation measures.
I think we're repeating now. We understand that.
So,
yes, sir.
Anyway, that was my point at this time, that since we didn't get paid with the money which we did, thanks to the one-acre manner, that's why everything halted and we never proceed beyond the pilot test.
Okay, thank you.
May I say something more, please?
Yeah, briefly, please. Summarize.
One thing I'd like to add. The staff understands my dilemma that people weren't allowed to be paid. So my question is, instead of attacking me, how come, and I understand it's a common procedure, when you have a party that's causing things not to go forward, that typically what the water board does is issue them an order to do the cleanup. Why am I being attacked? I have been on record many times. I want this cleaned up faster than you can imagine. I wanted it done immediately. When I appeared in Judge Wilkins after I lost the case, and she ordered us to settlement, Mr. Kelly made the statement I wasn't doing anything, and it found out that I immediately got a hold of the board and was having immediate conversations without being wait to be told. That is what I do. So my question is, why am I being attacked when I really want this cleaned up, but both hands are tied?
Yeah, let me just state, Mr. Dunlap. This board in our history, we're not attacking anybody. We don't wake up in the morning and say we're going to go attack a discharge right there, okay? So I don't particularly like those comments.
I apologize. I'm just using layman's terminology.
So we are held responsible for the water quality in the Nine Bay Area County. So our job is, along with staff's professionalism, we are sitting here to judge information. I think we've gotten plenty of information from both parties here at this time, and I'd like to hear from staff, and we could question staff, so we can make a better judgment on how we judge this information and what we want to do, and you've agreed that we want to clean up this situation. Now, the parties, I'm not involved in the legal aspects of all these situations of property neighbors. Unfortunately, the neighbor situation doesn't sound like a very positive one at the time. So I think now I'm ready to question staff a little bit and see what direction, and then we will go back to our team that's given us advice on recommendations so we can ensure that it's been a fair hearing to all involved.
Mr. Chair, can I do that?
Yes, of course, Mr.
Just
Kissinger.
Two quick questions for Mr. Dunn. Are you here in your individual capacity? Are you here as a representative for Mayhew as well? So are you here in both capacities or just in your individual capacity?
Unfortunately, we don't have the funds for an attorney, and our attorney quit us. So I have to represent both.
And when you say that you don't have the funds, I understood from Mr. Kelly that the escrow fund were no longer available. They had been returned. Is that not correct?
As I stated earlier, I have not been privy to this information, and he's sharing something that I have no knowledge of. And I don't think it's fair for him to be speaking on that issue unless both parties have the same information. I have not received anything from the courts. When he said it, I was stunned.
All right. Thank you, Vice Chair.
Hope this is a quick question, and it's from Mansoor. In your judgment, if you were able to implement the procedures that you would want to implement under a new IRAP,
yes,
how long would it take, or would what you plan to implement actually solve the whole problem? And if so, how long would it take?
According to the results of the pilot test that we did, it will take probably around 4 to 5 months steadily operation of the multi-phase extraction the machine. to extract all the remaining PCE from groundwater and soil at the source area. I understand that because of the extent of contamination might come a little bit further from the source area, and the radius of influence of the machine is about doesn't go beyond 10 to 15 feet away, we need to add additional wells at the Walnut Creek Manor as well as down gradient to clean up the whole plume. That needs to be tested, I would say, probably in a year. It could be done if the funds are available.
Thank you. Board members, question? Board Member McGrath.
I have three questions for staff. I mean, there's a lot of things that I don't think are relevant to the questions before us. I don't care who did it. I don't care if Mr. Denovan is an innocent victim or not. I mean, legally, our attorneys will tell us what responsibility he has as property owner, but the cleanup, these all go to the cleanup question. So the first question is, did the staff approve the IRAP in October of 2012 with an understanding that implementation of that IRAP would result in a successful cleanup?
Yes.
Yes. So that's the first question. So there was approval, there was oversight. Second, does the staff agree that there may be more cost-effective alternatives, such as multi-phase extraction, that could also result in a successful cleanup?
Yes.
And they could be more cost-effective. We don't know at this time?
Generally, this is Stephen Hill with the Water Board. Sorry, I didn't introduce myself earlier. Generally, the in-situ methods are cheaper than soil excavation. Soil excavation is sort of the brute force approach. It's very effective, but it's very expensive.
All right. So, and the third question is, was the pilot project that removed 36 to 60 pounds undertaken with proper oversight from the regional board or the county hazmat people?
I'm going to let Ralph answer that. I think the short answer is no. It was done. It was self-initiated, and we found out about it as we went along.
Yeah, this is Ralph Lambert. We were made aware of it. There is no work plan submitted, so we couldn't approve anything. And like Stephen said, it was self-initiated on their own property. But we were aware of what was going on, and we were in discussions, email and talking on the phone about what was going on.
Are the results credible in terms of the estimates of removal of 36 to 60 pounds?
I believe so.
Okay. I'll make one or two comments here and then reserve the rest of my comments. Having done a number of cleanups, it is clear that extraction with wells or other assisted is more cost effective. Also has a higher yield up front when you're in the high concentrations. So it has diminishing returns over time. And all of that needs to be looked at technically, but I don't think it is fair to say that nothing has been done to implement cleanup. What was done to implement a cleanup effort, or at least frame one out, wasn't properly approved and thus wasn't in the proper context for regulatory approval for another one. And then I'm going to reserve some time to comment about the role of the private attorney generals in the public role, because it's often useful, and in this case I don't think it has been. But let's see what the rest of the question is.
Thank you. Vice Chair or Board Member Kissinger, please.
So I have a number of questions. So let's picking up on Board Member McGrath's question about a multi-phase extraction remedy. Obviously it's not a new method. It's long existed, and it certainly existed at the time of when the IRAP was drafted. How come it wasn't the remedy that was selected then?
Stephen Hill again. The Water Board will suggest alternatives available, but we don't select methods, as Ralph said earlier in his presentation. So that actually is a question that might better go to the parties.
But if I'm, I guess I want to stay with you for a little bit. I'm afraid to go to that side.
Okay.
It's getting late.
I understand.
but I mean, the IRAP, there's an IRAP plan that was put together. I guess the discharger put it together. His environmental consultant put it together. It came to the board then and then resulted in the plan that was then adopted by the board. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. So,
I don't believe they really considered it at the time. One of the things, they were trying to meet this deadline from the court order for the 2 years they were allowed at the time for cleanup, and the fastest way to do that was by excavation.
Okay. I was really struck in our response to the comments that we're not bound by the federal court's decision, and I correct as a legal matter that we're not a party to it. But by the same token, there is a doctrine that lawyers live with, which is that, you know, the term is res judicata, and a matter decided is a matter decided. It's not revisited. So I guess one question I have is, to what degree have we looked at the court's order and asked ourselves whether that order is inconsistent in any way with our obligations to protect health and safety, and whether the two can be reconciled?
Well, fair question.
I'll speak to this. This is Tamara Austin. I'll speak to this from the legal perspective, and then I'll pass it back to staff for the technical perspective.
Speak up a little bit louder so everyone hears this.
Sure. Tamara Austin. And I'll speak to this and the legal perspective and then pass it back to staff and they can talk about the technical perspective. From the legal angle, the court order is focused on the Walnut Creek Manor dispute and solely that area of the dispute. The Regional Water Board has a separate mission from the court's mission. The court's mission is to figure out the dispute between the two parties. Our mission is to figure out protecting human health and water quality. That's our goal. And so staff has separately looked at source area, where is the biggest source, what needs to be addressed, and that's the focus of our tentative order. Now, looking at the court's order as well, the two are not inconsistent. The court is ordering cleanup. It's ordering to particular levels of cleanup. Our order is not that specific at this point in time. It's going to establish, it orders that through this process, we will come up with cleanup standards. Those may match what the court has ordered. They may not. But there is nothing in the order that is inconsistent or that would require Mayhew Center to act in a way that is inconsistent with the court order. So, staff, I don't know if you want to.
I agree with what she said.
Yeah, and I.
But
teach my husband to, that.
and Tamara, I take your point. But to me, I think there's almost two pieces to this puzzle. There is the landowner dispute, which is not before us. Or if it is, it's only to the extent that the concentration, the hot spot that exists right at that border poses a risk to health and safety and to the environment. So that's one piece, and that's what the IRAP was aimed at focusing on, getting at the immediate source, stabilizing it, preventing any further infiltration into groundwater. And then there's the broader question that the remedial investigation and feasibility study, where you are determining the nature and the extent of the overall contamination and then what the remedy is to address it. And to me, those are almost two. They're related, to be certain, but they're almost two separate issues. There's something that needs to be done now, and that's the way we've approached it to date, where we've got the IRAP on the one hand, and then we have, even in this new tentative order, an RIFS process on the other hand. So back to my question about the court's order, I guess I'm still struggling with, while I agree with everything you just said, I don't understand why we wouldn't, in light of a fully litigated case, which has a final judgment for which there is no pending appeal and no argument about the facts that were adjudicated finally, why we would not order going forward with what the remedial measures, the interim remedial measures were that were accepted, were in fact put forward by the discharger itself, even if now the discharger has identified new, more cost-effective ways to go about it. And I guess I would add further, there's a long history to this case with repeated notices of violations. And while I'm sympathetic to if there may be more cost-effective ways to do this, this case didn't begin yesterday. It began years ago. And I guess the question is, on the one hand, I have to accept as a fact that this is an innocent landowner at this point. That is what's been adjudicated. Facts of diesel engines that were used there, facts of storage of chemicals there. That's not before us. We don't have anything to say about that. And to the extent we did, I believe it's already been adjudicated as a matter of law. Why wouldn't we bend over backwards to adopt the remedial, the interim remedial actions that have already been put forward by the discharger, have already been subject to public comment? Why wouldn't we order that to happen now rather than reopen the door?
And before you add to that, because I think it's a wonderful line of reasoning, given that at least part of the problem we have here is a recalcitrant landowner, which is what the staff stated, and which is at least to some degree my belief, would that not enhance our enforcement posture given the very long time that this has taken? I mean, I'm very unhappy with the amount of time that's occurred. And so there are enforcement difficulties, I understand, inherent in the Water Code, but to the degree that this gives us a much more effective enforcement tool, isn't maybe now the priority actual enforcement and water quality achievement rather than cost effectiveness, as I think board member Kissinger has pointed out. The time for that arguing has perhaps come and gone.
So this is Tamron Austin, and I'll address the question concerning why don't we just kind of adopt the court's order and embrace that and go forward from there.
Or just to refine the question.
Please.
Go forward with the interim remedial actions that were previously accepted by the discharger and which the court order seeks to enforce, if I understand the order correctly.
Okay, and there's two issues in there. One is, of course, that we are confined with the Water Code, which is limits us to, under 13360, we cannot order a specific manner of remediation. And we dealt with this in the Leona case a couple of months ago. The dischargers came in. They said, we've got this old approved remedial action plan, but we don't want to do that. We've got a new consultant. He's looked at it. We want to do something else. And we said, okay, we understand. We understand how people view things differently and so on. I want to mention with respect to the court order, though, that this board actually has a real advantage over a lay jury that would have examined the issues in trial. And this comes from my personal experience in litigation, which is that there are motions in limine that remove evidence from the jury. They don't always see the whole picture. We don't know, sitting here today, what the jury saw, what the jury didn't see. But we do have our own experts in-house, and we're very lucky to have folks who are certified hydrogeologists and can look at all of the data and independently examine what the source is, what the best form of remediation is, and then approve plans on that basis. And so I would hesitate to say that this board is bound by or should embrace a jury's finding or a court's order because, again, we don't know what they've seen or what they've evaluated in that context.
Which is why I asked the question at the outset whether there was any inconsistency between what the court's order was and what the IRAP specific items included. And I think the answer back was there is no inconsistency. It may not be the most cost-effective, but it would address the problem. And I guess to me the most telling slide in here is slide number 10, which shows from the aerial perspective the areas requiring remediation, which is just, maybe it's not to scale, but it's a tiny piece, maybe very costly if you're going to actually extract soil and you're going to take groundwater and have to send it off-site. But it's a tiny piece to be done, and it doesn't interfere ultimately with the overall scope of the cleanup, which we are also requiring of the discharger in terms of determining the nature and the extent of the contamination elsewhere.
I'm going to put myself out here a little bit. My staff will pull me back in, but yeah, I'm going to give you my perspective on this. that IRAP has been in place and it has not been implemented. And it appears in part it has not been implemented because of insurmountable obstacles related to property access. We have expressed a willingness and an openness to look at other alternatives that may be more feasible in terms of implementation given the issues surrounding the property boundary, which would also achieve our same goal. And the time frame in which we're willing to have those looked at is fairly short. It is March 31st, 2014. So 3.5 months is essentially what we'd be allowing here to have some additional thought and investigative work put into seeing if a remedy could be found out there that could indeed be implemented, because that's what we all need to happen as quickly as possible. We have made it clear through our enforcement actions that they need to move forward. And in fact, what we have said is if you cannot get access to the neighboring property, you are still responsible for moving ahead. And at that point, if contamination still remains on the adjacent property and they will not allow access at that point, then we need to actually look at that property owner and view that as a secondary source, because if they are not allowing it to be cleaned up, then we have to intercede as well. So we've found ourselves in a tight position here in a dispute over access that the courts have not been able to successfully push on, and this is our way of at least trying to move forward and seeing what can be done. That's I guess. Yeah.
Board Member Abacobi.
I guess that's very helpful, and I did notice the timeline is pretty tight. My question was in relation to the recalcitrance of the landowner, and you know what our goal is: cleanup, remediation as quickly as possible. Given that, and given that the time has passed, and is this new information regarding the access that is making us review this and reconsider actions? I guess I'm trying to see or get some idea of, you know, how we can get real action done this time and, you know, not come back and when this plan is past due and, you know, go through this again. Like, what can we do to make sure that this is going to happen now?
From my perspective as the one who also leads up the prosecution efforts, it's to adopt an order that is enforceable. We have been working, we have not had this type of an order in place. Yeah, okay. So the violations in the past have been violations of a separate requirement underneath the water code. Mm-hmm. This is your enforceable tool to drive action, and that's essentially why we're here today to move forward with this.
Okay.
Thank you, Vice Chair.
I would like to just clarify a few things just for the record. We've got three plans in play here. We've got the court order, we have the original IRAP, and we have the proposed action in front of us. What I'm still a little unclear on is what's the difference between what the court ordered and these other two components. I mean, it may not have covered the same amount of property, but within, let's say, the amount, the area that it does cover, is there anything that the court ordered that would not have been done under the original IRAP and would not get done under the proposed order? I'm trying to construct my Venn diagrams here, and I can't.
Sure.
This is
Stephen Hill. I think the way to think about it is there are really only two options. The court order didn't specify a manner of cleanup. It just said there needs to be cleanup. Here are the standards. The IRAP came later as a result of the court order. And then last of all is the proposal that you've heard from the Mayhew folks just this morning. So there were two competing ideas for how best to clean up this source area near the property line. And you've heard the pros and cons of each. I think both could be consistent with the court order. Both could be consistent with this cleanup order. And if you notice, the very first task in the cleanup order says, you know, you have the option to propose an alternative. And the second task says, whatever you decide, it's got to be done by May. So we've got a fairly short leash here, just to reiterate what Diane said.
Okay, second question. I'm getting at the what and the how fast. So in terms of the how fast, is it going to get done? What's the difference between the timeline, the court's timeline, the timeline of our original IRAP, which has not yet been implemented, and the timeline that is proposed here today in terms of cleaning up what we're trying to get cleaned up immediately?
To the best of my ability or knowledge, the court said their cleanup was supposed to be done within 2 years, the federal court.
Starting?
November 2010.
So November, December, or something of 2012.
By now.
And the IRAP, when we approved that, it was supposed to have been done at least around that time frame. And they weren't able to start it or didn't start it.
We have two things that haven't been done.
And apparently there's an extension they said today to July, I think he said. I'm not sure.
Do we have any,
pardon me,
as things stand now, if we didn't adopt this that's proposed, we'd still have to do something else in order to get anything done, in order to get the original IRAP done or the court order or anything, right? And so what would the timeline on that be?
I'm glad you asked that. This is Tamara Austin. I wanted to clarify that the existing IRAP is not a cleanup and abatement order. There is no deadline that this board can enforce. So that's been the issue that we're trying to grapple with, is what is the tool in our toolbox that we can use to have an enforceable order to make cleanup go forward?
Okay, I think we finally got there. Thank you.
So at this time, I think I'd like to bring it back to our advisory team here, and see what type of recommendations we can make that this board could consider to move forward on this very contentious, serious matter for all parties.
Right, and I think Tamron hit the nail on the head that to date, the enforceable actions that have been issued on this site have been, to my understanding, under Water Code Section 13267, which is more of an information request. And indeed, at one point, the board did enforce against late submittal of that. The tentative order before you, based on my reading, does spell out the tasks now for implementing initially the interim remedial action, doing further investigation, completing a risk assessment, and then coming up with the final remedial action plan. And that's the typical approach we would take on most sites. My understanding and having some knowledge of the Hookston Station site, where this board did issue a cleanup order 6 or 7 years ago, was that part of that. That's when we looked at the surrounding area and did request investigation done on a number of parcels in the surrounding area. Based on that, these parties did some work, and that started a process sort of typically outside what we would normally be involved in that resulted in the federal court order. We're now looking at the fact that left under its own devices, the federal court order could have achieved the type of cleanup we would have expected. It has not at this point. Thus, the board or this cleanup team has prepared the tentative order before you with those tasks, incorporating, from my reading, as Stephen Hill said, I think an appropriate approach of saying you need to do the interim cleanup by May 30th. That's pretty rigorous. That's 5.5 months. And also noting that you have the option of doing the staff-approved IRAP from October 2012. Or there's a task in there that should you want to do something different, it has to come to us and get approved, unlike what the pilot project was. But you're still being held to that May compliance date. And so in my mind, even though I hear the concerns from Walnut Creek Manor that we're adding extra tasks in here, I think the cleanup is pretty rigorous in terms of aggressive in terms of its date, saying what things should be moving forward. So I don't see any need to modify the dates that are existing in the tentative order. So you have
a question. I do have a question, and I'm just trying to dot all the I's here and cross all the T's. Is there anything, if we were to adopt this order today, is there anything in it that could conceivably interfere with or slow down the implementation of the court order if Judge Wilkin would come back and do something else? Would we have gotten in the way?
There's a lot of talk about the court order, and I have it, and I looked at it, and it's very broad. It just basically says that Dean Donovan and Mayhew Centers are jointly and severally liable, and that they have to clean up the Walnut Creek Manor property, and that's it. And, you know, I think you've heard from cleanup staff that this order goes much further than that. It drills down and actually sets out the process by which the cleanup will occur. So I would agree with the cleanup staff that, you know, there's nothing inconsistent between the cleanup order or the proposed TO and the very general court order.
Okay, and part of it, Yuri, just continuing on there, there still is the factor of cost and who's going to pay and who has the means to pay.
But that's not an issue that we normally get into.
I understand, but I wanted it to be out there.
So our charge is to, you know, find who's responsible under the water code, right. Not CERCLA, which is what the subject of this federal lawsuit was. So we're finding that, or the proposed TO finds that Mayhew Center and Dean Donovan are dischargers under the water code and have to clean up the property.
And so the parties would have to go back through their own court legal process on funding and escrow accounts and all the things we heard about over the period of months. Okay.
Can I ask one more?
Yes, sir.
One more question. One of the requests, and I understand the reason for the request, is that the TO be amended so as to show Walnut Creek Manor. Lost track of the name. Sorry, I need lunch. It's not a discharger. Now I take your point that this was a different statute. It was under CERCLA. It was also under nuisance law. Why are we reluctant to say that when what I heard from the board presentation or from staff presentation is that we agree that there was no evidence to suggest that they were a discharger? Why are we reluctant to include that in the TO?
In part, it's not our practice to state within tentative orders who is not a discharger. So essentially we are saying is based on the information that we have available now in the record, we are not naming them as a discharger. And that's essentially how we do business.
I'd go even further and say that, yes, historically for our cleanup orders, we focused on a specific property and then the owner operators on that property. And so I guess it begs the issue if we say, well, Walnut Creek's not a discharger on this specific property, then where do we stop saying who's not a discharger on the property? So
that's fair.
If this order was considering naming the property the Walnut Creek Manor property, obviously different findings on the order is not proposed.
Can I add a little bit to that too, Stephen Hill again? The tentative order does talk about the fact that the source is on Mayhew Center very clearly, and that's on page 4 of the tentative order, the paragraph that starts off the depth of soil requiring treatment. So we're very clear in the tentative order to say that what we think is the source, and there's all sorts of off-site properties where we could say they're not dischargers. And in fact, I own a home in Contra Costa County, and my name's not on there either. But we usually limit ourselves to the source site.
Board Member McGrath?
I'm on that point, and then a comment about the procedure that's I think getting in the way. I had considered initially the FMI, but along the same line that Board Member Kissinger had suggested, being drawn into that question of exactly what is not wise. I do think it is important to put on the record that some of the arguments that have been suggested today are simply not persuasive. Mr. Dunneman suggested that there may have been an operation with a diesel engine or an underground storage tank. The volume of material that's involved indicates a persistent discharge of substantial magnitude if we're looking at 200 to 300 to 400 pounds of PCE. Those are not things that happen with a diesel tank or cleaning up of a diesel engine. I've had to clean up after engine manufacturing problems, and it's not nice, but it's not of this volume. So I think it's equally important to say on both sides what is or is not the information and stick to what we know. The next thing, it's a fascinating case in some ways that California has a tradition of allowing the public to step into the Attorney General's role to enforce environmental statutes. And generally, I think it's a good idea. I think it's had two unintended consequences here that we need to be aware of and careful of. The first is that you end up with potential arguments about what mitigation is needed for access to an adjoining site and whether or not those are reasonable. And that's frankly none of our business. And I would not be willing to be party to a court order that set aside a chunk of money and then set up a process by which you argue over who fixes what on the adjoining property if they go on to it an inch. There are real concerns there. Excavation of 10 feet close to the property line is a big deal. But should those be bona? And then that raises the second question. Apparently, in the escrow agreement, there is some method for what are or are not bona fide cleanup costs, but we're not party to that. So, I mean, those to me are two very persuasive reasons why we should not either be bound by or adopt an approach of going after the existing court order, even though it may, through the federal courts, be faster. It may not end up being faster because of these arguments that entail. So I think the staff has put together a solid recommendation in a very tough and difficult and contentious boundary dispute.
Thank you. Well, I think we have to go back to our advisory team for the recommendation.
Well, and this is, I think, at one level been fascinating for everybody, but as Board Member McGrath says, there are a lot of issues that are not the purview of this board. In fact, historically, this board has taken the approach that while we will name responsible parties and dischargers, not get at all into the discussions of level of responsibility, level of payment, and typically in most cases, we would issue a cleanup order and then the parties would attempt to work something out on their own. As I stated earlier, some of the history here was that we were focused elsewhere, and the parties obviously didn't quite work things out on their own and had to go to court, and so we're doing things a little bit backward. But based on that, I think some of the arguments I've been hearing as the comments essentially saying don't go back and start at square one and comply with the court order, I don't see that the tentative order before you starts at square one, and I don't see the benefits of trying to match the court order, because I think the tentative order before you sets out very aggressive tasks in an order that we would typically approach a site and ultimately is designed to achieve that cleanup, and under not only an aggressive time schedule, but more importantly, under enforcement time schedule. And I think that's the key here, is that the item before you is to establish an enforceable time schedule, have a list of tasks, and then make sure that as those tasks are carried out, there's a regular check-in with staff on the acceptability of the work plans, and that this has the chance to succeed at what really is our mission of achieving cleanup and protection of water quality. So based on that, and the other issue of the need to call out Wannell Creek Manor as not being a discharger, I think as we've touched on that, that hasn't been our practice, and I don't see any water quality benefit from doing so in this case. So based on that, my recommendation would be to go ahead and adopt the tentative order that's before you without amendment.
I move adoption.
I'll second.
It's moved and seconded. Any further comments on it, Board Member Kissinger?
I'll just make a quick comment. I appreciate the remarks and the work that staff has done here, and I have a better sense of it, having heard my concerns and heard responses. I will vote for the tentative order. I do it somewhat reluctantly, insofar as I am just deeply troubled by a discharger who has been recalcitrant for many years, may have had the best of intentions, may have been poorly served by your council, may have been poorly served by your environmental consultant. It may be work that could have been done much more expeditiously earlier on if you'd had the right environmental consultant, and I'm sorry for that. I do think that the court did the right thing here in terms of, I mean, without making any judgment about the case or the evidence, I haven't seen the decision, but as it's been described here, what I understand the court to have done is to say, look, we the court have no insights as to how a site should be cleaned up. We just, and so the court issued an order which says it should be cleaned up to whatever the appropriate residential standards are to be filled in by the regional board, and that's as it should be. I recognize the conundrum that we're in, that there's no order out there and no deadline. And what I would say is, in voting for this tentative order, that I will take a really dim view if, when we get to July and there's a request for additional time because there just hasn't been enough time to work out an alternate approach that you think will work very well, but you haven't had time to get to the board and to be approved and to get in the field and to operate. And I will take a very dim view that the rainy season is coming and we just can't get it done because of the rainy season. This is overdue. We acknowledge that it's a risk to public health and safety, to the environment. Our job is to get the work done. I'm sorry, but it just has to get done. This is a very valuable piece of real estate. It's not a question of whether or not there are assets available. There are assets available.
Thank you.
I would make
Vice
a comment
Chair.
For the record as well. It seems to me that the most that a very difficult part of this dispute, one, is where the funds are going to come from. That's not under our purview. Another very difficult aspect is who gets property access and when and who doesn't. That's also not under our purview. So we have to set those things aside when we're making our decision. I'm going to vote for this, not completely happily either, but with the understanding that it is the shortest distance between two points for us right now, that it will not interfere with any parallel implementation of the court order, should that begin to occur, and that it will create for us an enforcement tool that will get the worst part of the site cleaned up as soon as possible. So, again, it's the shortest distance between two points, and that's why I'm going to vote for it.
My comment quickly would be, and compliment everyone for this testimony. This has been a couple hours. It's been very intense and very unfortunate situations for all parties involved. Just as a little quick note, I would hope maybe the two parties could visit with their city and possibly visit with dispute resolution people and just kind of see if we could work out things along that line with professionals to see if we could break down this barrier of hostilities. And I know it sounds easier than just doing it, but I would make that suggestion. And I thank everybody for their very intense history of this project, but I think we're moving in the right direction, and thank staff for working this out, and thank this board for just the great questions and professionalism that we've showed. And as I said earlier, we have to balance the information we receive from the discharger, from our staff, and from our advisory team, and how do we judge that information? And I'm hoping and I'm sure we're judging it in the right direction. So call for a roll call vote, please.
Aye.
Board Member
Abitoga?
Aye.
Board Member McGrath?
Aye.
Vice Chair Young?
Aye.
Chair Muller?
Aye. So ordered. And our next item on the agenda, you'll have to understand, I think you'll be a lot happier if we have a quick break and we'll be back down here, because we're not going to be very pleasant if we don't have a quick break. So thank you for your patience, but this was a very serious matter for us to address. No later than 2 o'clock. We'll be back as soon as we can. This is tough.